Hi, it's David Harewood here.
David Harewood, thank you, man, for calling up here at the Toddcast in Vancouver, Canada.
That's no problem.
Recently, people are going to know you from your role in Supergirl, of course, Homeland as well. We'll get into those shows in a bit, David, but I wanted to start off by finding out, what were you watching and being influenced by as a kid? Were there actors in specific shows that kind of helped you down that acting path?
Inspired by, the greats like Robert Mitchum, Kirk Douglas, that generation of men, Spencer Tracy. I was always attracted to those kind of strong lead men and those kind of old classic movies, I guess. I was always just always being gripped by film and telling stories, and I think a lot of that just must have just gone in by osmosis, I guess, because I was always watching television, always as a kid.
Mm-hmm. And what was that first show to really grab a hold of you?
God, looking back, 30 years. I would say, the movie that grabbed me. The movie that grabbed me was 12 Angry Men. I think Henry Fonda was in that, and I think it's a great film where it's just brilliant performances all around. I think that was the one film that really kind of keyed me in. 12 Angry Men is a film by Sidney Lumet, and it's a kind of all set place in one room, and it's one person holding out as for a not guilty plea, and him persuading these 12 angry men that the kid who's on trial is actually innocent, and it's just a brilliant performance from all of the actors in there, because they're all brilliantly kind of drawn characters, and as an acting kind of masterclass, it's just a great film to watch because you're completely wrapped up in this story, because they're all in one room and all trying to persuade one person trying to persuade these other 12, of the right to make the right decision. It's just a fantastic watch.
Mm-hmm. And it really is a group effort as well. You really get to see that synergy between the roles and the character development too.
Yeah, I remember coming in as when I was 15 when I first saw it, and it's just I missed the beginning of it, but I was just so gripped by the action that took place in that court side room with the actors. It's just brilliant, and I guess I watched a couple of times a year just to kind of watch the performances, really.
Right. And were you a drama nerd in high school?
No, I was just a clown. I was always a bit of a fucking idiot, really. That's just me. I was always, anything for a laugh, throw myself down the stairs for a laugh, get thrown out of class for a laugh.
Right.
I just wanted to entertain, so I was just always, that was my skill, was just entertaining, making people laugh. I was never particularly academic,
right.
But I loved going to school because all my mates were there, and it was a kind of an audience.
Yeah.
So I guess it was the back of the class was my first sort of stage, right?
Right. And how old were you, David, when you got your first paying role?
Probably about 19 or 20.
Okay.
Probably about 19. And I came out of drama school. Hang on a minute. I went to drama school when I was 18, so it was probably 18, 19, 20, about 21, 22.
Right.
So I came out of drama school, and I really started working almost straight away. My first job out of drama school was playing Romeo.
Oh yeah,
in a theatre company.
It's
just so bizarre.
I bet.
Remember it being so bizarre.
Yeah,
getting paid and very exciting. Exciting way to make a living, but slightly bizarre way.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's imperative to have a manager?
Not for everybody, but I'm very glad that I have one. I mean, there's somebody who's kind of, out there steering my career, and, if it wasn't my manager, I probably wouldn't have found Homeland. If it wasn't my manager, I probably wouldn't have found Supergirl, and, so, it's the managers that are out there sniffing and getting you, into rooms, and I'm just very happy that I have.
Right. Right. Now, speaking of which, of course, David, mentioning recently, we've seen you in Homeland, The Flash, of course, present day Supergirl. Did landing any of those roles come easier than others?
Well, Supergirl was basically kind of offered to me.
Oh, that's great. Those are the best kind.
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, you know, sometimes you really want to, I mean, you see a role, you want to go for it, and you want to go for it and get it. You know, you want to get me in the room for that meeting. You know, I want to, you know, you might phone your agent up and say, look, you know, I know they're doing, you know, another Star Wars film. I want a role in that, you know.
Right. And
sometimes you could, sometimes when you do that and you get it, it can be tremendously rewarding. At the same time, yeah, it's nice when people just say, look, we've got this thing in here. Do you want to come and do it? You know?
Yeah.
So it's, sometimes it's not always nice to be given stuff, but sometimes, you know, sometimes you actually do want to get it.
Mm-hmm. And how fun is it, though, to play Martian Manhunter?
I mean, it's been great, but it has also been frustrating. I mean, it's a character with his own mythology, and the great. I mean, you know, we've read Martian Manhunter comics, and we know what he's capable of. But I think playing him as a support has always been a little difficult because, you know, he's a very strong, very capable superhero. But obviously, it's not my show, so I can't always be the hero or save the day. And that can sometimes get a little bit frustrating because you have to find reasons why he doesn't do something. Oh, he always got knocked out. Oh, he's got knocked, you know, oh, there's something from Mars is preventing him from saving the day, or something from, you know, there's always a reason why we can't save the day. And it just can get a little frustrating as an actor, because you know that everything you've read in the comic books,
right,
would suggest that this character is perfectly capable of taking on anybody.
Well, of kicking ass and taking names.
Yeah. It gets a little frustrating when I read, oh, Hank gets knocked out.
Or, right.
You know, John taken out. John gets, you know. I read it and I kind of go, okay. So I've kind of had to swallow a lot of the frustrations that I've had, and I just get on with it.
Right. No, fair enough. And I wonder if there's a talk or back meetings of a spinoff of that character, because you're right. I mean, it's a character that's very capable to lead their own series.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether that's going to happen, but
I don't know. Pipe dream,
maybe. I'd love to. And I mean, the idea of, you know, we've got him now in the show running his own private detective agency.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting. You know, that's exciting for me to see where that could potentially lead. But as you say, it's never going to be his own. This is not his show. So I have to fold into somebody else's kind of heroic arc. And that sometimes means that I don't get to do what I know I can do.
Right. This feels like a natural question to ask you, David. If you could have a superpower, which power would you want to have?
Probably flight. I mean, you know, it'd be so cool just to not get the bus and drive to work. You know, you could just jump and fly down to Langley, down to the studio, missing all the traffic on the one. That would be just super.
Really. Mm-hmm. And of course, it would have to be like Superman fast, flying around the world in, you know, seconds.
Absolutely, yeah. We don't want to be, you know, stuck in traffic or anything.
No. You can fly, but you can only fly at 30 miles per hour.
30 miles per hour and, you know, not too close to the ground quite. And I kind of like the idea that, like, I like the idea of just running and jumping in the air and flying around, doing what I got to Paris in 2 seconds, you know.
It's pretty badass, yeah. What are you binge-watching lately, if you find times? What are the shows that you can't get enough of?
I like, at the moment, I'm watching Homecoming.
Right.
Amazon Prime. Was heavily into Man in the High Castle the other week. That was, I got into that. It's a great show. I've got to admit, my sort of filthy habit is I love watching Crime Investigation Network. I just love watching these crime shows, man.
Yeah,
I could literally watch one after the other. How do people get these ideas? You know, rather than divorcing your wife, I know, I'm going to chop her up, bury her in the garden, and just pretend to everybody she's gone on holiday. You know, how do people think they're going to get away with that shit, you know? But they do, right? They do.
It is something.
They're actually going to get away with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I know. You can get stuck into those styles of shows and just watch, like, you know, 3-4 hours later, you know, maybe I should actually do something with my life.
Something. Maybe I should get up and cook some food, you know, instead of gnawing at this chair leg.
And what's the last movie that you saw in theater?
Ooh, last movie I saw in the theater. God, blimey. it would have been here. Surely not The Incredibles.
Good movie.
I watched The Incredibles twice with my kids in the summer when they were here.
Yeah.
I think that was it.
Right. That might be it for me as well. I'm same thing. I got a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. So, you know, when I do go to the movies, it's not like, you know, I'm not going with the boys. I'm not going, you know, to watch shoot 'em up crazy, you know, Deadpool 2 shit. I'm going to see, you know, what's the latest animated flick?
Yeah, I mean, I do go. I mean, I still like to watch, you know, those other movies. It's just I don't have time, you know.
And right.
I mean, this is probably sacrilege, but I haven't seen any of the last couple of Star Wars films.
Wow. Really?
No.
Yeah, big franchise. I think that, you know, as a huge fan, I mean, that David, that stuff literally, it took over my life as a kid for, you know, the whole decade, basically. Like, from 77 through 87, that's all I did was play Star Wars, was pretending to be Luke Skywalker and Han Solo. But I think, you know, as a massive fan, they're putting too many movies out. Even if they are really good, there's too much. Like, maybe, can that happen with a franchise that's that big, oversaturation?
I mean, I think so. I think when fans themselves become a little bit, a lot of people were kind of turned off by Solo. Mm-hmm. It's almost like we've been hit over the head too much with too much of the same. And, you know, the original three was so groundbreaking and fantastic. And
right.
There was a certain romance to those original Star Wars movies that we seem to have been just hit over the head. I mean, Star Wars radiators, Star Wars teeth, Star Wars cups, Star Wars glasses, Star Wars bloody socks.
Sure.
Everything. And when you go in the summer, you went around and the Star Wars everything. And over commercialized.
Yeah.
And 100%. It's probably just turned me off a little bit. You know, I'd rather go and see something a little bit more original and quirky than just buy into the same machine, you know?
Yeah. I will admit, though, it is pretty cool that, 40 years later, you know, now I'm introducing my kids to the same stuff. I mean, it is pretty neat in that regard, I guess, but
it can't be a bit much.
Dude, let's get outside of acting, and thank you again for doing this with us. Let's get outside of the acting, though, and what you're known for. What was your first concert?
God, my first concert. first concert was probably, I'd have to pluck one out of the air. I mean, I can remember seeing George Benson. This is like in the 80s, early 80s, I guess.
Right.
So, yeah, so George Benson.
Flipping through some cobwebs for that one.
Yeah.
Are you a good cook?
I try to be.
What are you cooking if you're trying to impress your buddies? You got friends coming over for a night?
I'll do a lamb curry.
Okay.
It's hard here sometimes because sometimes finding flavors or finding ingredients can be challenging. Here I think it's not quite the same. Not quite as simple to cook what I know here.
Right. Interesting.
I find that it's the same in America. You know, you just have to find a slightly different way. In England, it's easy to go and get. You know, I know where to go to get my flavors.
Right.
In England.
Here you're more of a, you're hunting, you're looking for stuff.
You're looking for stuff. And also, you've got to be, it's tough. I'm here for like 10 months of the year, and you've got to watch what you eat all the time. You can't just pig out. You've got to be, you know, you've got to work out a lot here, because when you're on the telly all the time, you know, you've just got to be conscious of what you're putting in your face, because you know you could get very 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 easy to pig out. I mean, if I spend a week on the burgers and the pies and the beer, you know, you're going to see it. And
really, that truly does add 10 pounds.
It really, really does. And you know, use costumes. You might have to start letting your costume out, and before you know it, you know, you're just kind of not quite feeling good. So I work out 2 or 3 times a week, and that means I have to start eating right, and cooking is, and it's just one of those things you just have to do, but you've got to be disciplined about it, and not just sit there and fill your face full of crap.
Right.
You've got to try and be clever with what you eat and be healthy.
Yeah. Do you believe that aliens have visited Earth?
I certainly do, yes. I believe, I just can't believe that we're the only bloody things alive.
I know, right? Like, really, in the entire universe, really? There's nothing else?
It doesn't make sense. Yeah. So I certainly think if we can put a probe on Mars, you know, somebody sending things.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Hey, I saw your feed, by the way, on your Twitter. I love the first video feed.
I like the fans. Dude, I thought the fans would like that.
Yeah, that's funny. I like that. What's your take on legalized marijuana? Of course, that just
love it.
Came to Canada. You love it.
I love it. I mean, look, you know, I come from England where, you know, you have to, you know, meet some stranger in the back of a pub toilet and then, you know, spend 4 days walking across the desert and then to find a place to buy it and let them smoke it. You know,
right.
So it's kind of like, it's extraordinary for me to just be able to walk into a place and just go, what, can I have a bag of that? I think it's very sensible. I think it's a very adult and progressive way of looking at the whole problem it's a problem of drugs, but there is, I think, making it legal and controlling it certainly improves the quality. And I know in places of England, people are smoking stuff they're getting for like $10, and it's sending them literally crazy. You know, it's a lot of this synthetic
stuff, yeah,
coming from China, and right. It's just rubbish. And it's kind of, I'd much rather the government took a sensible, grown-up approach, sold it, controlled it, sold it, and regulated it,
sure.
than just put your head in the sand and say, no, drugs are bad. All drugs are bad. We don't advocate anybody buying anything. But at the same time, there are downsides to it, you know. In the summer, you see it here. You know, you see people just their faces on the street. You know, one walk down Gastown or down East Hastings will show you that there's, you know, not everything in the world of you know, kind of progressive drug taking is straightforward. Do you know what I mean? I think
right, but those guys aren't. Come on, David. Those guys are not smoking marijuana. That's methamphetamines. That's
meth.
Heroin,
completely. I think a progressive attitude to drugs, I think, is helpful, and I think I think that, you know, obviously, I'm not sure what the. Could you buy, what's the age limit for buying weed here?
Yeah, I think it's the same as if you're going to buy booze. I think it's 19.
Yeah, that's sensible. That's sensible.
Yeah, you know, if you can, you know, go home and brew your own beer and make your own wine and, you know, why not the same with marijuana? It's been proven that there's no deaths from it. Like, dude, if there was a death from marijuana, they would pound the crap out of that.
That's true. That's
right?
True.
I mean, it would be relentless.
It would be relentless. No one gets stoned and then goes home and beats up their wife, right? I mean, it's just not what weed does to you. So I think it has been, and it's quite extraordinary. I think I was watching TV the other day and I saw this advert. John Boehner, I think his name, the former head of the House Speaker for the Republican Party. I mean, you couldn't get any more right wing than him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's there advertising some weed. Investment program. I'm thinking, fuck me, they've locked all these people up for fucking years.
Right. Years and years for possession and years or smoking or whatever.
And now here they are trying to sell stocks. It's just extraordinary the
hypocrisy is
incredible. It is extraordinary. I think it has been much maligned. I think weed has been much maligned and much, you know, the whole, you know, taking it and smoking it has been criminalized for way too long. So I think, you know, Canada's struck a bold move in making the whole thing legal, really.
Right, right. I've two more questions for you. One's going to be the toughest I'll ask you, and the other is an oddball question. Have you ever had a near-death experience?
I once was in New York, and I'm not the strongest swimmer, but I was in New York in the Hamptons, and on the beach, throwing frisbees about, and frisbee kind of went past me and went into the water, and it literally looked about 10 meters. I thought, that's no problem, I'll go and get it. So I jumped in, started swimming, and before I knew it, I really quickly realized that I wasn't getting anywhere. And I kept thinking, I'm not getting any closer to this bloody frisbee. I thought, I'm nearly there. But I realized I'd been swimming, and I was tired when I actually got there. And I finally got to the frisbee, and I turned around, and I looked, and I was about a mile away from the fucking beach. Immediate panic. Right. Immediate panic. I started swimming back to the bar, wasn't getting anywhere. And then I just saw this lifeguard just telling me, swim down, swim down.
Oh.
And he was trying to tell me to not swim into the beach, but swim down the beach.
Right.
And I was exhausted and going under. And I was really thinking, I'm going to go here. I'm actually going to go here.
Wow.
And I just kept saying, not today, just not today. And I was flashing around and flailing around. And by the time I could reach the bottom, I was halfway down the beach from where I was, exhausted, and just got out and just collapsed on the beach. I thought, I just said to myself, not today. Not today.
David, you wouldn't believe how many... I've had, you know, in the last 5 years of doing this podcast, I've probably had somewhere in the neighborhood of, I don't know, maybe 400 guests. And I've asked pretty much every one of them, I mean, 90% of them, this question. You wouldn't believe the amount of people that have almost died from swimming.
Yeah, man. Specifically, you know, on the beach, you think it's lovely, but
yeah.
you hit that riptide, man. You know it.
You're
you
not getting it. Back. You're no. Tossed under, you know, so many people have said they've been thrown under the waves, hitting rocks and shit. Like,
wow.
Just
wow.
Insane stuff, man. Like, insane, yeah. Like massive scars on, like, with the singer from Dirty Heads. Was on surfing and you know, he got tossed underneath, but his board came up and slashed him right in the face. He's got this massive scar now because of it. Like, crazy stuff, man.
Yeah, it happens. Crazy. It's very easy. Yeah. Very, very easy to happen.
Yeah. All right, the toughest one, David, and simply because it's, what's your career highlight?
Wow, career highlight. I mean, it's. It has to be Homeland. I mean, literally, the year I got Homeland, the year before I got Homeland, my best mate in the world, who used to kind of make me laugh and tell me all these, you know, he just used to laugh all the time. And he was the one person who was convinced that I was going to make it, and would always just tell me, look, don't worry about it, you're going to make it. I've got no fear about it whatsoever. Absolutely convinced about it. And on my daughter's birthday, we were about to walk out and go and get some food for my daughter's birthday. I got this phone call, and he died. He had a routine knee operation, and he was dead. And it just completely destroyed me.
Wow.
I was kind of like, I just lost my kind of rock. And I was heavily grieving for about a year. I didn't work for 9 months. I just lost all my mojo, lost my confidence. I just couldn't do it. And I was just convinced I was going to go under. I couldn't pay my mortgage. I was fucked. I had no money.
Mm.
I was near very nearly broke. And my manager phoned me up and said, "I said, look, you know, I've got this job. You know, they want your tape. Would you put yourself on tape?" And I refused it. I said, "No, I'm not in the mood." And then about a month later, he said, "Look, Dave, you know, they're still asking. Would you really put yourself on tape?" I said, "I haven't got it." He went, "Just put yourself. Just do it. Just put yourself on tape. Just one time. Just raise yourself and just do it." And I did it. And then about a month later, I got a phone call from my agent saying, congratulations. I said, what's that? He said, you just got Homeland.
Awesome.
And I put the phone down and I said to my wife, I fucking got it. She said, what? I said, I got that job, Homeland. And my wife started to tear up. And I said, what's up? She said, do you know what day it is today? I went, no. She went, it's Louis' birthday. It's my mate's fucking birthday.
Come on.
I swear to God, on his birthday the next year, and I have not stopped working since.
Wow. Dude, I literally have my arm hair is standing on end right now.
But the dude, from being broke 1 year and grieving and lost, the very next year, we won everything. So it won the Golden Globes. It won... It won everything. So I was 1 year broke, you know, just absolutely down to my last dollar. And then the next year, I'm at parties with fucking movie stars and TV stars and walking past Charlize Theron and Leonardo DiCaprio and De Niro, and I'm like in this room with all these fucking megastars, and I'm just sitting there thinking, Jesus Christ, you know, it can happen that quickly.
What a story.
I just kind of thought to myself, this is from being really low to being really high. So that was my year, winning everything with Homeland and the Emmys and the Golden Globes. And every time I went down that red carpet, I was just thinking, Jesus Christ, if only they knew. Those are my highlights.
That is a way to wrap up this podcast. Holy crap, David. You are at David Harewood on Twitter. You're pretty active. You're engaged, which is really good to see.
I try. I mean, I used to be more engaged. I haven't really been tweeting a lot lately. I'm just giving myself a once over for a little bit and giving myself a break. But yes, I like to be engaged.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, David. And I guess we'll see you online.